mobile emergency departments, the West Coast learns from Sandy, caffeine drinks under fire, and we're going to take a look at part two of our series on antihypertensive medications. If that's what you're looking for, you found it right here on The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, and I'd like to welcome all of you to this week's program. Great show coming up for you this week, including another of our series on looking at Hurricane Sandy and lessons learned in the healthcare arena from that event. And we'll also be taking a look at caffeine energy drinks in the news this week, all of that coming right up. And then following that, we'll have a look at antihypertensive medications as we wrap up our two-part series on that class of medication. And we'll look at all of that coming up later on in this episode. Before we get there, I do want to remind you to follow up on all of the information you check out here in the show. It's your job to understand exactly how all of this applies to your own specific scope of practice, and that's your job to follow up on that. I provide additional resource links. I provide links to all of the news items over at nursingshow.com. When you get over there, click the link at the top of the page that says show notes, and you can find the most recent episode listed there, and you can scroll down and find any other episode as well. So follow up on the additional information and take responsibility to follow up on that information yourself and not just take my word for it. It's really your job to do that. If you want to get back in touch with me, you can reach me here by sending those emails into nursingshow@gmail.com. I love to hear from you, and I do respond back to every email that comes in. So please continue to keep getting in touch with me. I hear from students. I hear from longtime nurses. Lots of people sending me links, questions about the show, suggestions for future episodes, and all of that is just great. It really helps build the community here at The Nursing Show. I love to hear from you, and I hope that you will continue to send those emails in. That's it. We'll go ahead and get on into this rest of this episode as we get ready for this week's news. Starting off this week's news items is a look at a mobile emergency department that was deployed in the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy. As we continue to look at some of the follow-up to this disaster as we look back over the past month or so, one of the things that I found was that there was a great opportunity to utilize resources that, heck, we only practice with, you know, those mass casualty drills we have in the hospital or whatever the case may be. Hackensack University Medical Center had previously partnered with the Department of Defense to have a mobile emergency department available for deployment. It's a tractor trailer sized device that rolls around, pulled by a big truck, and the sides expand out. It has 6 ICU beds in it, as well as a mobile X-ray department and a mobile lab, so that a lot of information can be discovered on a location that may not have power. Their medical center may be out of service for whatever reason. And it's mobile, so it can go around and help individuals that are cut off, don't want to leave their homes or go too far from their homes because of looting. This mobile emergency department has really seen a lot of service in New Jersey. Now, going along with this emergency department, let me just make sure I look at the list here, goes a mobile emergency department manager and coordinator, 3 security officers, 2 physicians, 3 registered nurses, and an X-ray tech. And all of these individuals come together and operate this mobile center. It's really interesting to see, and I'm sure there's more than one of these stationed around the country in different strategic locations. But in the case of Hurricane Sandy, it was utilized quite well in the care of patients following this disaster in New Jersey. It's been moving up and down the Jersey Shore, different communities, helping to provide care for people as those areas' own medical centers and hospitals are still coming back online even weeks later after the fact. So we'll continue to follow up on these types of resources and tell you a little bit about what's out there. But maybe if you're listening to The Nursing Show and you're familiar with Hackensack University's Medical Center and their mobile emergency department, get back in touch with me. Send an email in here to nursingshow@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you, and maybe we can have you on the show and interview you about your experiences in this particular response. We certainly have seen that the effects of Hurricane Sandy are wide-reaching, but did you know that the effects are reaching all the way to the west coast of the United States? And not just for volunteers coming back east to take care of problems, but also the hospitals on the west coast looking at what happened when hospitals had to close because of unexpected generator failures. Now, on the west coast, their primary weather-related or disaster-related event is expected to be what? That's right, an earthquake. And there are standards for earthquake management and for generators and what they must be able to do. In California, the generators have to be tested on a periodic basis several times a year. And that testing must be logged and turned into the state and is followed up on, and spot inspections are carried out. But one of the things that they're looking at now is the location of those generators. And we talked a little bit about that last week in the news here on The Nursing Show. Where those generators are placed may have made sense when you're building the hospital. Let's put the generators in the basement or on the low ground next to the lower floors of the hospital. And what they're realizing now is that that may not be the best place to put generators or fuel stocks for those generators, because that generator is in a low-lying area that is easily flooded. And as we found in New York, when the generators flood or the diesel fuel tanks flood, then the generators fail. And when they fail, the hospitals have to be evacuated. So this is a lesson that needs to be learned really all over the country. You can look at areas that are struck by tornadoes in the Midwest, the Gulf Coast for other hurricane response, the West Coast for tsunami, or West Coast for earthquakes. There are areas all over the country that could really learn from where the best place to place your generator is. And it may have made sense when you built the hospital, but it might be time to figure out, do I need to put my generator up on stilts? Can I get a show of hands? How many people out there drink Red Bull or Monster energy drinks instead of coffee? Well, those caffeine energy drinks are currently under fire from the FDA. The FDA recently released a large number of complaints that they have received from the public and from healthcare professionals, looking specifically at the effects seen from people who drank too many of those energy drinks or drank them too quickly. And this could cause a lot of problems. According to this article here, the National Association of Poison Control Centers has reported that they receive about 2,600 calls annually on these particular types of drinks and people having side effects related to them. And so that's a significant number of people. We've had Lisa Booz here from the Maryland Poison Center come on and talk about caffeinated energy drinks. And I'll put a link back to that episode in the show notes so you can follow up and listen to what she has to say. But one of the things you need to be aware of is that these symptoms can show up anywhere. They can show up from somebody drinking a single energy drink too quickly, or someone consuming too many of these energy drinks. And they may have symptoms ranging from jitters to vomiting, all the way to seizures related to this. One of the biggest problems is people combining these energy drinks with alcohol. And the issue there is, of course, that the alcohol, at a certain point, if you drink too much alcohol, the body will just say, the heck with this, I'm passing out. And that way you can't drink anymore. And hopefully you haven't consumed it fast enough to give yourself alcohol poisoning even after you've passed out. But if you're drinking an energy drink with a lot of caffeine in it, it extends that time period you stay awake. And you can drink more alcohol, and so you end up becoming more intoxicated and more likely to incur alcohol poisoning. So there's several things going on here, and there's been a call from many people to do something to regulate or cut down on the number of energy drinks that are available in the market, or do something to educate the public, at least, about the bad effects, side effects from drinking too many of these energy drinks. There's no regulation on the amount of caffeine in them. There's no oversight into other products and side effects because of the fact it's essentially treated as a food item and a food supplement, and it has to be managed differently than if it were a drug dispensing caffeine. So we need to just kind of look at this, and I wanted you to be aware of it. I urge you to follow up on this article in the show notes. Of course, all of the news articles and items are listed over there with links, and you can find that over at nursingshow.com. Time now for this week's tip of the week, and we're going to pick up with part two of our segment on antihypertensive medications. We started that series last week and with part one, so if you haven't caught last week's episode, you might want to go back and do that. There'll be a link in the show notes, or you can just go over to nursingshow.com, click that show notes page, and scroll down to the previous episode and go ahead and listen or watch that one first. And then you can come back and catch this tip because I pick up in the middle of that discussion about antihypertensive medications. But let's go ahead and get on into this week's tip of the week. Vascularly targeted meds include our ACE inhibitors. And these end usually in pril, P-R-I-L, so enalapril and those kind of medications. ACE inhibitors are medications that act on that angiotensin converting enzyme segment, and they stop some of that peripheral vasoconstriction that is brought on by angiotensin II. Alpha blockers, there's peripheral alpha blockers that actually go out there and stop those alpha effects that affect directly the peripheral vasoconstriction. They cause peripheral vasodilation, actually, as a result. And so with blood moving more easily through the periphery, there's less of that back pressure and therefore less blood pressure. So it affects primarily the systolic blood pressure because it's stopping that peripheral vasoresistance that we get in the small vessels. We also have renin blockers, and this is another newer class of medication. There are also some other angiotensin 1 blockers that are coming out, and these stop the renin cycle a little bit earlier in the process and block either renin output or block the conversion of angiotensinogen to angiotensin 1. And all of these also have a similar effect of stopping that peripheral vasoconstriction response. They also, of course, will affect fluid balance as well. So these medications, aside from the alpha blockers themselves, the ACE inhibitors, the renin blockers, the angiotensin 1 blockers, are all going to really have a multiple effect. So they're not just affecting the peripheral vasculature, but they will also have some effect on fluid balance as well. So let's talk a little bit about the fluid-affecting meds. These are one of the older classes of medications. They go along with the beta blockers quite often. Patients will be prescribed a beta blocker and a diuretic of some kind. And there are multiple kinds of diuretics out there. We have potassium-sparing diuretics, and we also have potassium-depleting diuretics, and we have osmotic diuretics. And just a little quick look here. I mean, your common potassium-sparing diuretics include aldactone, direnium, and there are some others out there. Potassium-depleting diuretics, most commonly you're going to see something like hydrochlorothiazide, furosemide, which is Lasix. We just see those medications quite frequently. And it's important to remember that if we have potassium-sparing diuretics, these help to rid the body of fluids, but maintain the potassium balance, whereas there are potassium-depleting diuretics, we really need to watch that potassium level very carefully and be aware that if the patient's on these medications, we need to make sure that they're getting regular lab work done and that they're very aware of their hydration levels, because their fluid balance and their electrolyte balances are going to be very fragile while they're taking these medications, at least until the meds are dialed into their own particular systems. And of course, we have the osmotic diuretics, which are medications like mannitol, which might be used in unusual situations. We have ACE inhibitors. We talked about those back in the vasculature section. ACE inhibitors, because they break up that angiotensin 1 to angiotensin 2 conversion, they stop that process from happening. Angiotensin 2 can't go in there and release the aldosterone, causing that to be sent in and holding on to that sodium, so we don't hold on to the fluid as much. And so that's one of that process. We have alpha blockers also have some diuretic effect because of their effects on the tubules in the kidneys. And renin blockers, again, part of that renin cycle that has multiple effects across the whole system. And again, we look at how these work throughout the system. What are our nursing considerations? Let's just talk about these. I've hit on some of them already, but let's talk about them as they relate to hypertensive medications in general. We need to monitor patient labs. If they're in a facility and they have these medications on board, we should be watching very carefully their lab work for the potassium levels, sodium levels. We might want to look at their H&H. We want to monitor them for general hydration, monitor their eyes and nose very carefully. So all of their lab work really needs to be monitored and watched carefully, especially their potassium levels. They may be getting potassium by IV, in which case you want to make sure you review potassium and understand that medication very carefully so that you're administering it safely and you keep track of your patient very carefully in that situation. Assess patient's hydration level. I call this the three T's. People go, three T's? What do you mean? Well, three T's for hydration are turgor, tongue, and tap. And I mean, what I mean by that is skin turgor. You know, just how does the skin spring back? Hydration maintains our skin's, you know, elasticity. That's it. Part of what maintains our skin being stretched taut the way it is, even in elderly patients, is because the hydration maintains that cellular buoyancy underneath. And so if we're dehydrated, those cells are going to be shrunken a little bit, and our skin's going to be a little looser than it normally is. So check skin turgor on the back of the hand or the arm. Tongue. Check out their tongue. Have stick out their tongue. Get a good look in there with a flashlight. If their tongue looks all furry, doesn't look very wet or moist at all, somebody I've heard call this, and one nurse described this as, oh, that patient's got cat tongue. They're dehydrated. Whatever the case may be, whatever you call it, check out their tongue. It's a good indication. If their mouth is not very moist, if they're having trouble getting some spit worked up in there, well, guess what? That means that they are most likely dehydrated. And then tap. And I just mean tap the skin. Check for capillary refill. That little tap and check. Now, we don't use capillary refill, I think, nearly as much as we should. But if you've been monitoring a patient regularly and you want to get a sense of how they're doing, you can use this as a trending tool. So if you've been checking their capillary refill for the last couple of days on your shifts and they have a cap refill of 3 seconds and you check them and their cap refill is now 4 seconds, guess what? They have something going on with their circulatory system. And if you're worried about dehydration, that may indeed be the cause of part of the problem. So use that. Use your three T's, turgor, tongue, and tap, to monitor patients for dehydration. Also, educate your patients. They may be getting new medications. They may have new combinations of medications. And especially in our elderly patients, they take so many meds. It is very important not just to hand them a pile of papers and say, here's your education. You need to review the education with them. And most importantly, you need to evaluate their understanding of the things you just talked about. Because if they don't understand it, then you wasted your time and their time, and you sent a patient home unsafely with a new medication. And that's just as simple as it gets. It doesn't mean a whole lot of extra time, but it may mean an extra 1 or 2 minutes to ensure that your patient has a good understanding of not only what's going on with this new medication, but where to call and contact someone if they need some more information, some backup, just some sanity check. That's very, very important. I'll talk about a little bit more about that later. Also, early and effective management of hypertension is one of the best ways to stave off later in life chronic disease problems. Stroke, which is the leading cause of preventable disability, I think, in the United States. I call it preventable because if we can manage hypertension early enough, we can cut the stroke rate way down. If we can manage strokes when they're recognized early enough, we can have almost a full recovery. So there are things about stroke that we need to be paying more attention to. One of them is managing hypertension aggressively early. Patients that are non-compliant with their medications are not going to be compliant and are going to not follow stay on their medications, and they are not going to be healthy. So let's do what we can to provide them the information they need
to manage their disease. There are a lot of antihypertensive medications out there. I just went through a whole list of them. There are hundreds of them. There are different varieties of medications within each drug class. It may take a while. It may take some effort, but you can find the combination that works best for your patient by working with them and the physician, the prescribing person, to help that patient identify the side effects and symptoms and problems that they're having, and then finding a medication, helping them to come back in and ask the right questions of their prescriber to get those questions answered and find a different combination. Maybe it's a dosing issue. Maybe they need a different med altogether. But we need to work with our patients on that. And of course, that brings up the last thing here, which is follow-up. I think it's very important to make sure that we follow up carefully with our patients. Finally, we have additional resources. I would urge you to follow up on them. I have some good information that is both review for us, but great patient educational information over at the FDA site for consumers. There's a great list of all of the cardiac hypertension medications by class, listing different medications and common side effects and problems. So check out that link. I also have a link to the NIH Medline Plus page on high blood pressure, and there's some additional resource links there as well as some great additional information for both us and for our patients. So check out the links in the show notes and follow up on this information. Again, you can find all of that over at nursingshow.com. And of course, if you're a Nursing Top Student member, you can find all of this information over at nursingtopstudent.com.
And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank all of you for checking out the program this week and remind you to follow up on the additional information available for you over at The Nursing Show website. You'll find that at nursingshow.com. When you get over there, you'll see a show notes link at the top of the page. You can click that link and it will take you to a listing of all of the episodes. The most recent episode will show up first, and you can scroll down and find all of the previous episodes there. So if you're looking for something in particular, but there are links to all of the news items discussed in each episode, as well as additional resource links for the tip of the week or perhaps for an interview segment that occurred during that week's episode. If you want to get back in touch with me, I urge you to do so. I love to hear from you. You can reach me here by sending those emails in to nursingshow@gmail.com. I welcome your emails, and I do respond back to every email that comes in, so please keep those emails coming. If you want to follow up with me on Twitter or Facebook or any other social media site, you can generally find me under the handle PodMedic, and you can find me there, of course, twitter.com/PodMedic or facebook.com/PodMedic. And don't forget the Nursing Show fan page on Facebook. Growing as rapidly as a lot of the audience in the Nursing Show community is, and you can find that over at facebook.com/nursingshow. Go ahead and click the like button right there near the top of the page and become an official fan of the Nursing Show on Facebook. I post other links to articles and additional resource questions and things like that over there for the Nursing Show community on Facebook. So you want to become part of that, definitely follow up on that. And don't be shy. Leave a comment. Click the like button on an article that you see there. It really helps to spread the word about the Nursing Show, and it's one of those things you can do to help serve the Nursing Show community. That's it for me. I'll go ahead and close out the show and remind you, I'm Jamie Davis, your host here at The Nursing Show. If you want to catch more, we'll have a new episode coming out every Friday. And in the meantime, please remember, stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.